Tower's top story is Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the Islamic Republic is not in a rush for the U.S. to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. A U.S. officer died of injuries he sustained during the violence at the Capitol on Wednesday, bringing to five the number of people dead from the riot. Also ahead, dozens of Algerian lawmakers reportedly submit a bill that seeks to criminalize normalization of ties with Israel. Our top story, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the country is not in a rush for the U.S. to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. Ayatollah Khamenei said Iran's logical demand is the removal of the sanctions. He called them a crime and treason against the Iranian people, as well as a sign of baseless antagonism against them. Ayatollah Khamenei made the comments in a televised address to the nation. He voiced support for the authorities' decision to roll back Iran's commitments in response to non-compliance by other signatories to the nuclear deal. The leader spoke about Iran's regional presence too and said it has helped improve security there. Also in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said Iran's imports of U.S. and British COVID vaccines are banned. All right, let's discuss this a little bit further with guests who join me for this section of the program for a little bit more in-depth analysis, perhaps. Why not bring in Dr. Sayed Mohammad Marandi? He is a university professor and political analyst who joins us via Skype out of Tehran. Professor, it's good to see you and good to have you with us all, as always. And I believe that we have Mr. Sam Mehdi Torabi. Again, he is the director with Risalat Strategic Studies Institute, who joins us via Skype out of the holy city of Qom. It's good to see you back, Mehdi. Let's begin with Professor Marandi in Tehran and perhaps his reaction to what the leader said today. Professor, please.
I think it was expected, and this is something that we've been pointing out to our European colleagues and Americans for quite a while now, that the Americans and the Europeans are not going to get a better deal from Iran. And it is either the JCPOA or nothing. And Iran isn't all that excited about the JCPOA anymore either. So if the United States and the Europeans want the restrictions to be imposed on the Iranian nuclear program, they'd better get their act together. They'd better start implementing the deal. And they should just forget about talking about Iran's regional role or Iran's military defense capability, because those are definitely off the table. There's no chance that Iran will negotiate anything about its missile defense capabilities or negotiate about Iran's alliances in the region. It's those alliances that have prevented ISIS and al-Qaeda and other dangerous forces in this region from gaining further ground. It is thanks to Iran's allies in Iraq, Iran's allies in Syria, Lebanon, in Yemen, in Afghanistan, that this region has not been destroyed. And in addition to that, if the region had collapsed as a result of Iranian indifference, today Iran would be fighting a much more expensive and dangerous war inside its own borders. Mm-hmm. So rethinking Iran's regional role is simply off the table. And Iran's military defense capability is what prevents those provocative B-52 flights from actually flying over Iranian airspace. The Americans know that those airplanes will be destroyed if they try to attack the country. So Iran would be very foolish to restrict any of its technological capabilities when it comes to military defense. And I think the most important thing that I'd like to point out here is that the world has changed. The United States is a diminished power compared to what it was in 2001 when September the 11th happened. It is still a force to be reckoned with, but it is not what it was two decades ago. And Iran is not the power of two decades ago. I think, especially over the past few 4 years, the Iranians have shown the world, and especially the United States, that Trump's brutal and crude maximum pressure campaign and the terrorist attacks, that they have absolutely no impact on Iran's foreign policy and Iran's capabilities to defend itself and its allies. And now we're seeing that as the United States declines, the Iranian role in the region is on the rise, despite all the expectations that we saw in the West and in Western think tanks over the past 3-4 years. So while the United States is declining, we also see the decline of its regional allies. We see these countries in economic crisis due to the global economic crisis and due to the coronavirus, whereas the Iranians have remained steadfast despite the difficulties. And I think that in the coming months and years, we're going to see Iran increasingly reap the benefits, and so will its allies. So if the Europeans want the nuclear deal, they have to rush back to the table and start implementing. There's no room for negotiations. The deal has already been negotiated. If the Americans want the deal, this is their last chance, because Iran is going to develop its nuclear program at full capacity. So either the Americans come and implement the deal in full, there are no negotiations necessary because it's already been negotiated, or the Iranians will continue with what they've been doing over the past 4 years. And without a doubt, the Europeans and the Americans will regret the decisions that they've made.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Professor. Please stay with us. Samati Torabi, my friend in Rome. Perhaps it's best to pick up where we left our discussion about an hour ago. And why don't we do that? And as well as the fact that, Sam, please include the fact that the leader also talked about the vaccine of the coronavirus and the fact that Iran is banned from procuring from particularly three countries.
Sure. Well, you know, this is very interesting because Iran is actually one of the few countries in the world that was able to develop its own vaccine. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was able to do that is because it is not one of these vassal states as we see that he referred to in the region, which he said, I'm not going to mention their names, mm-hmm. who are completely dependent on the West and live under the illusion that if you somehow connect yourself to America or the West, that everything, all the beauties of this world will be, you know, handed to you because you don't disagree with the U.S. or you decide to sign a peace treaty with the Zionist apartheid racist Israel. So the fact is that Iran has chosen this path over the last 40 years with the establishment of its own republic, its Islamic Republic, with the path of trying to be independent and to develop its own technologies, and it's been very successful, and is one of the countries that has its own vaccine. So there's no need for us to import vaccines from the U.S. or from Britain and from France. And let me just add another point here, which the leader referred to, which is that many of these countries use other countries, developing countries, those countries that are dependent on them, to actually test different medicines and vaccines. Mm. This is not some sort of a weird conspiracy theory. This is history. This is what they used to do. We have a history of this even in Iran, in Khuzestan, where the British had a long presence. And regularly, the British would test medicines on Iranians in Khuzestan that were working with them when the oil industry was being established in Khuzestan. So this is something that we already have experience with in Iran. And not to mention the vaccine and the way that this was used in the U.S. against the own African-American population, which we've talked about before on Press TV, which they used the various vaccines and medicines that they wanted, and they tested it on African-Americans. So, you know, the fact that the leader mentions these things, or he also mentioned or referred to the French in the 80s when they sold Iran tainted blood, which was tainted with the HIV virus, and many innocent people in Iran died from being infected from HIV. This is at a time when there was no medical treatment for HIV, and so a lot of people died from that disease in Iran. So we have a right, a historic right, and it's only logical that we would not trust anything that comes from the West in terms of the vaccines and the experience that we have with them. And, you know, there is no need to, because we have the best doctors, the best, you know, pharmacological experts in Iran who are able to develop our own medicines, and we did it under sanctions and under all those things that everybody talks about that are putting pressure on Iran, and yet we were successful and able to do that. And it wasn't only one team. It was, I think, up to three or four teams. Dr. Mirandi knows more about this, and including one of the teams from the defense ministry, which was under the leadership of Dr. Fakhrizadeh, who was martyred.
All right, Dr. Mirandi, perhaps, you know, that would be best to know your idea about this as well, you know, the vaccine, and the fact that, you know, if it wasn't really that important, the leader wouldn't have made that comment, you know, the way he did. I believe he's also sending strong messages to certain bodies. You know, would you open this up a little bit for us?
Well, we do see this campaign that is coming from abroad to create concern and fear among Iranians about the vaccine that is being produced or vaccines that are being produced in Iran. And it is obvious that it is coming from Western-funded and Saudi-funded media outlets, state-owned and not state-owned. And they are there basically to kill Iranians, to be very blunt. Those governments that are funding these media outlets are intentionally trying to create fear so that people won't use the vaccine, so that they can get more kills in their war against Iran. And these Iranian mercenaries who work for these foreign governments, they've been doing this sort of thing for a very long time. They've been carrying out psychological warfare for years, but this is a particularly despicable chapter in their war against Iranian women and children. But I think what's quite obvious is that among ordinary Iranians, there is a self-confidence today, despite all the hardships, despite the pain of the sanctions. There is no doubt about that. Despite the shortcomings in this country, despite mismanagement and corruption and all the things that exist in Iran like they exist everywhere else in the world. Mm-hmm. But there is a self-confidence today in Iran that didn't exist before. When we look at Iran's defense capabilities, I'm sure you recall a decade ago, or let alone two decades ago, every time the Iranians would make an announcement about a new weapon, they would be ridiculed by the yes. foreign media, by think tanks, as well as these Persian language media outlets like the BBC Persian or VOA or Deutsche Welle or the Saudi media channel and the other ones that are privately owned but funded by Western governments. They would ridicule Iran's capabilities. But then when we saw how Iranian weapons were used to bring down a $200 million American drone, how Iranian missiles struck an American occupation force in Iraq without even a single missile being prevented from hitting its target, when we see how Iran's allies in Yemen used Iranian technology to devastate Aramco, and how Iran easily, I remember being on Al Jazeera, mm-hmm. the day when Iran said it was going to produce enriched uranium at 20%, the first time.
I remember that too.
And a nuclear expert was on that program with me. I believe it was Inside Story.
Yeah.
And that expert said, Iran cannot do this. Mm-hmm. And within hours it was done. So Iranians have the self-confidence that most other countries lack. In the global south, sadly. And therefore, there's not going to be any, I don't believe that the propaganda that's coming out from these Persian language media outlets are not going to have the desired impact. And we are going to use those vaccines, and we are going to be way ahead of regional countries that are dependent and reliant mm-hmm. on the U.S. and Western countries mm-hmm. for their vaccines. Of course, Iran will also purchase vaccines from friendly countries and reliable vaccines from countries to help fix the situation as the Iranian vaccine enters the market. But ultimately, since Iran's production will be indigenous, Iran will be able to immune society far more swiftly than any other country in this region.
Mm-hmm. That's Syed Mohammad Marandi, university professor and political analyst out of Tehran. It's always a pleasure, doctor, to speak to you, and Samahdi Torabi, director with Risalat Strategic Studies Institute out of the city of Qom. I'm glad you could join us back, Mahdi. Thank you, gentlemen, and see you next time. Let's just move on to two other stories. This hour, a U.S. Capitol police officer has died of injuries he sustained during the storming of Congress with support of the President Donald Trump. The officer, identified as Ryan Sicknick, is the fifth person to die since Wednesday. A riot saw swarms of pro-Trump protesters surge in the U.S. Congress compound and force the evacuation of lawmakers. The violence broke out as Congress was meeting to certify Joe Biden's victory in the November presidential election. Four other people died as the protesters occupied the Capitol. Police in Washington, D.C. said more than 50 officers were injured during the unrest, some seriously. Political analyst Alexander Azadgan says the Wednesday attack on the U.S. Congress by pro-Trump protesters received preferential treatment by police.
There was a security breach. Perhaps some of the people there, security guards, were biased toward these people. The treatment of so-called white protesters is completely different than what we do with black protesters. Following our news here yesterday, around exactly 24 hours ago, only 13 people got arrested. Can you imagine if there were Black Lives Matter protesters or social justice warriors protesters in these, that if they committed what these insurrectionists committed, they would have been shot, they would have been gassed, and it would have taken right in front of the camera, and the law, so-called law enforcement officers would have gotten away with it.
The United States marks its deadliest day of the COVID-19 pandemic with nearly 4,000 fatalities. According to data from Johns Hopkins University, the record number of deaths has brought the total toll to nearly 365,000. The U.S. also recorded more than 265,000 new coronavirus infections. The overall number of people infected with the virus has topped 21.5 million. The United States is the world's worst hit country by the pandemic in terms of infections and fatalities. And finally, Algerian lawmakers have reportedly submitted a bill that seeks to criminalize normalization of ties with Israel. Reports say 50 legislators have submitted the bill to the lower house of the Algerian parliament. The bill calls for a ban on relations with Israel. It also prohibits the opening of representative offices of any kind and at any level with Tel Aviv, either directly or indirectly. The bill, among other things, bans travel between Algeria and Israel. If passed, anyone who violates the law will face imprisonment or fines. The move comes as several Arab states have agreed to normalize ties with Israel under U.S. brokered deals. They include Algeria's neighbor, Morocco. Palestinians have repeatedly condemned the normalization, calling it a stab in their back. And that's it with international news.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you.
And we have not sent you, but as a mercy to the world.
I want to be a servant of God like Muhammad.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Muhammad, Rasulullah.
A'udhu billahi min shaitanir rajim, bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Like Muhammad. I am Javed Akbari, and we are going to talk about Allama Tabatabai's Sunan al-Nabi. This is, of course, a book written by Allama Tabatabai, who is one of the great scholars. And Sunan al-Nabi is about the narrations of the Prophet and conducts and customs of the noble Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family. Of course, this book deals with the etiquette and also manners of doing different acts of worship, like praying, like reciting the Holy Quran, like engaging in dua and supplications. And of course, today we are going to focus on the manners or etiquette of recitation of the glorious Quran. Now, before studying the Prophet's sayings about the etiquette of reciting the Quran, it is necessary to know that the Holy Quran is indeed the most important and the most authoritative source of understanding Islam. It is the most important source of Shi'i thought. It is the most important source for derivation of Islamic laws and for moral teachings. If you want to know about Islam and its teachings about God, about resurrection, about the afterlife, and if you want to know about the code of conduct, about manners, about akhlaq, the Quran is the most important source. And of course, there's no doubt as to the fact that Quran is one of the sources of Shi'i thought, on which, from a Shia point of view, any investigation about Islam has to be based. Okay, if there is an investigation to be conducted about Islam, about Islam's teachings, now the Quran is the most important source, and of course it is followed by other sources also. And let me say it in brief: we have four sources which we rely upon in inferring the laws of Islam. One, the Quran, the glorious Quran. Two, the Sunnah, the tradition of the Holy Prophet. Okay, the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet includes his sayings, his actions, even his silence. Now, this is what we mean by the Sunnah. Sunnah is not about the traditions of the Holy Prophet only. It's not only about the Prophet's deeds and actions. It is actually a combination of all these three. Okay, now then we have the reason. Reason is also one of the main sources of Shi'i thought. And then we have the consensus, which is less important as compared to the other three sources. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about these four sources of Shi'i thought, because I'm not supposed to. I'm going to talk about the manners of reciting the Quran. And inshallah, we will explore the sayings of the Holy Prophet and his recommendations about how to handle the Quran. Okay, we Muslims believe that we must respect and give dignity to the Holy Quran. And this should be both in word and in practice. Now, when it comes to giving respect in terms of words, or in other words, verbal respect, means that we should talk about the Quran in a respectful and dignified manner. Okay, like when we talk about it, we should use the term, for example, Holy Quran. Okay, or we should use the term Quran Majid, because this is how we should respect the Quran. It looks like a bit light when you say Quran. Giving verbal respect means that we should use the appropriate term, like Quran Majid, or according to the Indians or Urdu speakers, Quran Pak, okay? And also Quran Kareem. These are the words which we use, which are used in connection with the Holy Quran to show and to suggest respect.
You are my one true love, taught me to never judge. Now all I want is to be with you.
Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Mustafa ala
Now, speaking from a practical point of view, it must not be defiled intentionally. The Quran must not be disrespected intentionally and purposefully. It is absolutely forbidden to do any action which amounts to disrespect, which is considered in common view, in the eye of custom, disrespect. For example, if you put the Holy Quran on the floor, and if in the eye of custom it is considered to be disrespect, it is disrespect, and you should not do it. We have no right whatsoever to do anything which amounts to disrespect, even to one of the letters of the Quran. And we should not even touch the Quran when we are not in the state of ritual purity. There is a verse in the Quran which says, لا يمسه إلا المطهرون. One of the verses in the Quran also mentioned in this very book, Sunan al-Nabi by Allama Tabatabai. لا يمسه إلا المطهرون. It has different meanings. It has different connotations or different significations. One of the significations which has actually to do with the literal meaning of this verse is that when we touch the Quran, we should be in the state of wuzu, in the state of janaba, or for example, women are in the state of period. It is not permissible for them to touch the script of the Holy Quran. Now, if someone is not even in the state of janaba, it is not permissible for him to touch the Holy Quran and to touch the script of the Holy Quran. Now, let alone touching the names of Allah. God has different names, okay? Some of these names are prerogative of Allah. They are used only, for example, for God, like Allah is the specific name. It's a name only used for our Lord. And of course, Creator is a specific name, okay? Now, Raziq is a specific name used only for Allah. No one other than God is Raziq. No one is, for example, sustainer, or no one is a deity except God. So we should not touch the names of the Holy Quran without wudu and without ritual purity. So, inshallah, in the following episode, there is more to come. We will discuss it from the perspective of the riwayat and hadith of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him. There are many, many sayings about how to handle the Quran with respect and dignity. There are many hadith sayings from the Holy Prophet. And of course, if you would like to get to know those sayings and those traditions, you can refer to Allama Tabatabai's Sunan al-Nabi. We will definitely touch on those narrations and sayings based on Allama Tabatabai's Sunan al-Nabi. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad gave. Shafi'ullah, Habibullah, Nabiullah, Rasulullah, Khalilullah, the friend of Allah, ya Rasulullah, Rasulullah.
Iran Today.
The White House in transition released two New Year statements. While outgoing President Trump reflected on what he called his historic victories, President-elect Biden looked to the future with plans for improvements such as distributing COVID vaccines more quickly. In working our way back to review Iran in 2020, America's historic victories come into play. Trump's accomplishments included frequently ignoring the severity of the pandemic and at times even ignoring the science behind virus transmission. Earlier in 2020, he presented Iran with a New Year gift, the lifeless body of its anti-Daesh general, Soleimani. Soleimani was assassinated on the 3rd of January by a U.S. drone strike in Baghdad. And later in the year, towards the year end, Fakhrizadeh, an Iranian nuclear scientist, was assassinated. Stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today and running you through the year past. In between assassinations, Iran grappled and is still grappling with the coronavirus like the rest of the world. But whilst under the harshest ever sanctions imposed by the US. In attempting a chronological account of events, I begin with cause of the year's first assassination. Dr. Marandi is going to be accompanying us on this show. And you'll be seeing some of our show guests from past and reviewing 2020.
I think the reasons for the murder of General Soleimani are quite obvious. The Americans were frustrated that they were defeated in Syria. They were supporting ISIS and al-Qaeda, and so were their allies. And they were hoping to undermine Syria. We know that from the former U.S. Secretary of State, Kerry, when he said we allowed ISIS to advance on Damascus to put pressure on President Assad.
Soleimani was martyred after Trump was impeached, but before his Senate trial. So it was partly a distraction from White House insufficiency and offense. Trump simply mulled over the decision over a round of golf, according to Bob Woodward, the journalist who authored Rage, a book on President Trump.
Soleimani was plotting imminent and sinister attacks on American diplomats and military personnel, but we caught him in the act and terminated him.
This was at a 9th January news conference, a day after the Iranian reaction to the assassination. But how realistic was Trump's explanation? No sooner had he spoken than his own Secretary of State, Pompeo, contradicted him, saying there were a series of imminent attacks that were being plotted by Qasem Soleimani. We don't know precisely when, and we don't know precisely where. Apparently, that speculation was enough to slay the father and protector against Daesh or ISIS, along with his company of nine, including a man who enjoyed similar reverence in Iraq, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. That was the deputy commander of the Hashd-al-Shaabi paramilitary umbrella group.
So then we saw the Iraqi parliament move to expel, to call on the United States to leave and end the occupation. And we saw the millions of people in Baghdad go to the streets demanding for the end of the U.S. occupation. And during the anniversary of the assassination of General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, again, we saw huge crowds in Baghdad on the night of the terror attack, as well as during the following day. So the response of the Iraqi people was very different from what we would be hearing from Western and pro-Western media outlets and think tanks and pundits.
Soleimani wasn't exactly your run-of-the-mill IRGC commander. He had evolved socially as well as militarily, So it wasn't completely surprising to see women with partially covered hair among the millions of mourners, or for me to see a policeman quietly weeping as he kept an eye on the procession from above, on the pedestrian bridge where we were filming. Soleimani volunteered for the eight-year war of the 80s that Iraq imposed on Iran with generous help and encouragement from world powers. Over the U.S. strike on the Soleimani al-Mohandes Company, Iraq could not remain quiet either. And in the face of growing anger, the Iraqi parliament urged the government to oust the roughly 5,200 American troops stationed in Iraq.
Based on conventions, when a country has military barracks in another country, even legally, but carries out military action in violation of their agreement, the latter's military presence will be deemed illegitimate. Then, the host nation can reverse the agreement and demand that they withdraw their troops. The U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani in Iraq violated international conventions as well as bilateral agreements. What the U.S. did amounted to human rights violation.
As for the Iranian reaction to the U.S. strike, ballistic missiles fired at Iraq's Ain al-Assad base where U.S. forces were stationed. America's inability to defend itself against the air attack or its unpreparedness was a great historical humiliation for that superpower that has made West Asia its business more than that of West Asian states themselves.
After the assassination of General Soleimani, the Americans sent us messages through diplomatic channels and we responded to them. They also sent mediators who were making efforts so that the Americans decide the timing and the place of retaliation. One of these mediators said that President Trump was even ready to lift sanctions on Iran in return for no retaliation from Tehran.
The Americans had no ballistic missile interceptors in range when on January the 8th, Iran fired 13 ballistic missiles into Iraq at bases housing American troops, 11 of which hit the Ain al-Assad base. It was a warning, and no American or coalition partners were killed. On the same day, that's January the 8th, a Ukrainian passenger jet was shot down shortly after takeoff from Imam Khomeini Airport off Tehran. All 176 people on board flight PS752 lost their lives. It must have been a natural consequence of expecting a U.S. reaction to the Ain al-Assad retaliation. Iran's military said it unintentionally downed the plane, mistaking it for a cruise missile as it turned towards a sensitive site belonging to Iran's IRGC. Ukraine International Airlines denied the plane veered from its expected course before the crash and said officials should have closed the airport. Canada's Foreign Minister Champagne actually alleged he did not believe that the downing of the plane could be blamed on human error, whereas Iran implied there could have been no cover-up as Canada's representatives had visited the site of the crash and had participated in the reading of the plane's black box in Paris. The argument for Iran is pretty straightforward. The downing of the plane was just hours after Iran's retaliation to the Soleimani assassination, so Iran was expecting a possible reaction by the U.S.
Well, the downing of the passenger plane was tragic, but I think it's very clear for any sane person and any fair-minded person that the real culprit is the United States. We have to remember that Trump threatened to destroy Iran. He threatened even to destroy Iran's cultural sites. So when the Iranians retaliated for the assassination of General Soleimani in Baghdad and they fired missiles at the occupation base in Iraq, where the American forces were based, the al-Assad base, the Iranians were expecting an American counterstrike, and the officer who shot down the plane, he made a very, very tragic mistake, and a very horrific mistake. But there's no doubt that if it wasn't for the American murder of General Soleimani, if it wasn't for the constant threats to destroy Iran by Trump, that this would never happen.
Iran is determined to neutralize U.S. hostility. Well, its parliament, for one, is. It was on February the 21st that elections for that new 11th parliament were held, and this is how results looked. 40 independents were elected, 19 reformists and moderates, and as many as 220 principalists. Voters opting for principalists was because they wanted a more decisive approach towards weak Western compliance with the JCPOA, the moderate government's pet project. There has been interesting activity in Parliament or the Islamic Consultative Assembly since, which I will be referring to later in the program. Blocking the transfer of medicine or the means to pay for it, that's oil money, or to transfer it, sanctions through and through. No, actually, you can call it genocide on the sly. Here's who's the culprit and who cares with Corona on the loose. Blocks on medicine and or banking so that Iran can't pay for drugs, raw materials and medical equipment. Culpability begins with the US, but the strain has carried on in Iran. This in spite of the fact that the United Nations Human Rights Commissioner called for the urgent reevaluation of sanctions against countries grappling with the global pandemic. Coronavirus disease, or COVID-19, was first reported from Wuhan in China on December the 31st, 2019. Iran confirmed its first cases on February the 19th, 2020. Those were two positive cases in Qom city. The disease spread rapidly to adjacent provinces and shortly thereafter to all 31 provinces. The Ministry of Health took action by seeing to the formation of the National Committee to Combat Corona. Iran was not alone in its suffering. West Asian economies contracted by an average of around 5% because lockdowns slowed down domestic economic activity and limited global demand. Pandemic-sensitive sectors such as tourism particularly suffered, as did oil prices. And unemployment and poverty that prevailed before 2020 worsened and is foreseen to worsen further in 2021. Most regional governments worked hard to manage the crisis, but carnage was unavoidable given limited fiscal space. Now, Iran has had U.S. sanctions, be they legal or not, to deal with on top of the pandemic. The country has grown resilient to sanctions that have been ongoing throughout its 40-plus year life of the revolution. But with a maximum pressure campaign, it's surviving by gasping for air.
Let me describe the situation of some countries around Iran these days. Most of them don't have any equipment or device for detecting this virus. And unfortunately, I should say, many of these countries don't even have a healthcare system. They can't even specify the number of infected people. For example, the healthcare system in Pakistan and Iraq are much inferior to that of Iran. In Iran, there are many labs which try to test this virus and other viruses, and our healthcare system is able to check this virus and give report to the World Health Organization every day.
U.S. restrictions on Iran's banking system and oil exports have limited this country's ability to finance and purchase essential items from abroad. That's drugs as well as raw materials and equipment needed to manufacture medicine domestically. Talking illegal, the Trump administration has even reduced the number of licenses it grants companies for certain medical exports to Iran. It is not possible to determine exactly how much U.S. sanctions have affected Iran's capacity to fight a virus, according to Iranian medical workers and global public health experts. It is clear, of course, that Iran has been deprived of equipment needed to control further infection and save lives.
Iran has manufactured much, but surely its capacity to control the outbreak has been limited. The U.S. pulled out of the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or Iran nuclear deal, in 2018. The deal that was supposed to lift sanctions off Iran in return for Iran limiting its peaceful nuclear program. Yet in 2020, America attempted a resolution to indefinitely extend the UN arms embargo on Iran. That would mean tampering with a provision of the JCPOA, which the U.S. no longer had any business with. But for all its maximum pressure campaign against Iran, the U.S. for once found itself receiving minimal support. The occasion was marked in mid-August as the UN Security Council resoundingly defeated the resolution, leaving Trump's America with support only from the Dominican Republic. In the 75 years of United Nations history, America has never been so isolated, the then-Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Mousavi tweeted.
Despite all the pressure applied on Iran, it maintained its regional policy vis-à-vis its Middle East and Anatolian neighbors with which it has normal ties. Owing to deep-seated ties with neighbors, the country was spared serious economic harm, and the economic collapse the U.S. hoped to happen by 2019 did not happen. What is clear is that the Americans have failed in their pressure campaign to bring Iran to its knees.
JCPOA signatory China said, should the U.S. insist, regardless of international opinion, it is doomed to fail like today. Unilateralism receives no support and bullying will fail. Germany, however, ended 2020 by saying outright it did not trust Iran. Now, what might that mean for the JCPOA and Iran's compliance with the deal? Its compliance in limiting nuclear activity, that is.
No one in Iran cares for what anything the Germans have to say. What is important for Iran is the nuclear deal. If the Germans and Western countries want Iran to implement their side of the bargain, then they have to implement their side of the bargain. This is not an act of friendship. This is not a marriage. This is a deal. This is a deal that was negotiated over years. Both sides gave and both sides took.
The Iranian government may have had to struggle with domestic corruption, but external problems alone have been many, beginning with the U.S. pullout from the JCPOA to mostly just verbal compliance by other Western parties to that deal, and all forms of sabotage by the U.S. and or Israel, as assassinations and explosions of nuclear sites. Principalist parliamentarians submitted separate plans to Ghalibaf to withdraw from the JCPOA an additional protocol to the NPT, Nuclear Proliferation Treaty, that is, if it comes to it. Their resolve was intensified by the Natanz explosion and Fakhrizadeh assassination. Here's where I slip with the chronological.
The explosion at Natanz uranium enrichment site was a major highlight of the year past. It was the result of sabotage and a tragedy. It caused major damage that would slow down the development of advanced uranium enrichment centrifuges.
Natanz, much of which is underground, is one of several Iranian facilities monitored by the IAEA, the UN nuclear watchdog, which certified 15 times that Iran was in full compliance with the nuclear deal. That's till before Iran was pushed into mincing away from its commitments, however reversibly so.
Fatality was inflicted not just on a nuclear site, but a nuclear scientist, the last of several nuclear personalities assassinated over the years. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh departed on the 27th of November, 2020.
Israel is not lightly suspected of the assassination, as it had marked the name Fakhrizadeh in addressing the world with accusations against Iran years back.
No, I don't think the statement that the Israeli regime carried out the murder of General Fakhrizadeh, Dr. Fakhrizadeh, Professor Fakhrizadeh, I don't think that's speculation. It's pretty clear from Trump's retweets, from what senior American officials, unnamed, said to the New York Times, and from other material that has come out, that the Israelis were involved. And ultimately, the Israeli regime will have to pay a price. But already the Americans are paying a price, because Parliament approved a law to expand Iran's nuclear program as a result of this murder and terrorist attack.
In my opinion, there are two goals behind this assassination. It's a general goal that those seeking to restrict Iran's military industry have stepped in to turn their demands into an operational stage and thus assassinate the father of Iran's military industry. This has been a large-scale goal. The second goal was tactical. They seek to force Iran to make a rash reaction to this event. Basically, Mr. Trump is working with Israel to make Iran do something that would make it fundamentally impossible to return to the deal.
With all that's come to pass, non or weak compliance with the JCPOA by Western parties to that deal, assassinations and sabotage, Parliament decided to put an end to a one-way game. Here's how. Iranian Parliament is resolute it will lift sanctions off Iran or ditch the deal. Its resolution is named Strategic Action to Lift Sanctions. The 1st of December saw MPs approve the outlines of that bill. This followed a phased reduction in Iran's commitments to the JCPOA, given what President Rouhani called the E3's support for the constant intensification of cruel American sanctions against Tehran.
Well, the Parliamentary Act was in response, partially, to the murder of Professor Fakhrizadeh. And it was a form of punishment. It was telling the United States that when you condone murder, when you give a green light to murder, this is the response that you get. But it is also sending a second message, and that is to Biden. And that is that if Biden wants to implement the nuclear deal, he can do it on day one. He can give presidential decrees and reverse everything that Trump has done within one day. His lawyers actually could be doing that right now. That was his intention. And the Iranians are saying, if you do not do so, that means you're buying time and you're playing games. And we're going to expand our nuclear program as a result.
According to the nine-article bill, the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, AEOI, will be required to produce and store at least 120 kilograms of enriched uranium with 20% purity at the Fordo nuclear facility every year to fulfill the country's peaceful industrial demands. Also, the organization is to increase the monthly output of enriched uranium for various peaceful purposes with different purity levels by at least 500 kilograms. And it is to increase the number of centrifuge machines to 1,000 within a year after the ratification of the bill. The bill also necessitates the inauguration of a metallic uranium factory in Isfahan within 5 months and restoration of a 40-megawatt heavy water reactor in Adak, which was supposed to be redesigned and optimized under the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. The bill requires the government to prevent any foreign access and monitoring beyond the additional protocol and to suspend the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, NPT, 3 months after the ratification of it. Once again, that is if the parties to the nuclear deal between Iran and world powers fail to uphold their obligations under the deal.
The fact is that the impacts of the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA and the intensification of sanctions on the Iranian society are quite obvious. We no longer accept negotiating on anything other than the nuclear issue. It's very natural. The other side is not trustworthy and has always been so.
That's all we've got on 2020 today. We will be back to cover events in the new year each week at the same time, so do tune in. Happy New Year.
What? What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.